Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the What Culture Gaming Podcast. I'm your host, Scott Tailford, joined by James Dowse.
Hello, Scott.
And Josh Brown.
Hello, everyone.
Hello, everyone. Hello, every single person listening to this. Now, we thought that we would break down the ongoing revisiting of the GeForce leak from last September, because that thing was a humongous, well, literally a leak of like 50 plus whatever it was games, tons of different games, loads of different platforms, and only over time has that thing become more true, most recently being headed up by Kingdom Hearts 4 dropping left, right, and center alongside the likes of the GTA Definitive Edition, Street Fighter 6, Crisis 4. Basically, it seems that this big GeForce leak was indicative of these games that were going to come true eventually, and if you start going back to that leak, there's a lot of juicy stuff in there that I think is worth picking apart. So we've got about 10, 11-ish games from that overall leak that we can focus on.
Before we jump in, I don't know if you've got this on the docket, but I want to know what you guys think about Kingdom Hearts 4, because my social media was going nuts about Kingdom Hearts 4. But I, my friend, have never finished a Kingdom Hearts game.
No, me neither. I've played all three main ones. Mr. James Dowse, though, is a hardcore fan.
I was discussing this with you prior to this, Scott. I used to know everything about that series. All the lore, everything.
Can you summarize it in 15 seconds?
I could not. I'm not going to.
I heard Aqua got norted. Norted? Aqua got norted?
Sure.
Yeah.
What does that mean?
I don't know, to be honest. I don't even know what a heart is in the Kingdom Hearts universe.
I played the third one. Like, I loved every single one. One, two, a thousand of the spin-offs. And then three came out and I stopped playing them.
Oh, that's where we came in a bit.
Because
I hadn't played since like Kingdom Hearts 1, and I remember the gummy ship and everything, and I just got lost in Kingdom Hearts 1 and never finished it. And then 2 I played a little bit of, and I was like, I don't know what's going on. And then I just left it for 20 years and then came back with Kingdom Hearts 3. I went, that's a lovely model of Hercules and all that, but I didn't do much else, really.
Kingdom Hearts 3 was the first one I owned. Like, I played the others around friends' house, and, you know, partners really enjoyed them, so I knew it, like, by osmosis, by, you know, 6 degrees of separation. When Kingdom Hearts 3 came around, I thought, this looks beautiful. I want to try this. And then the cutscenes happened, and I thought, my brain is literally melting, and I don't know what to do to get it, scoop it back in my ears.
I think it's telling that it's like Tetsuya Nomura's baby, who obviously went on to the Final Fantasy VII remake, and there's so much Kingdom Hearts in the Final Fantasy VII remake, just so much gubbins. You're doing a little face, JB.
I keep putting my hand up like I'm in school. I'm just so excited to talk about this, and I don't know why. Yeah. But actually, it's funny you mentioned the Final Fantasy VII remake, because that's the thing that made me more excited about Kingdom Hearts, because I loved everything that dude did in the Final Fantasy VII remake, so I thought, maybe if I like that, I like Kingdom Hearts. If I give it a proper shake of the bat, is that a phrase?
No.
I'm not sure. Okay.
You shake your bat if you want, mate. As long as it makes you enjoy Kingdom Hearts, that makes about as much sense.
The art style does look very nice. It looks very Final Fantasy, which makes me think that all of the films, because usually, obviously, they have like Aladdin, Lion King, whatever. Are they going to go down the live action route of Lion King? Are we going to say real lion, Scott?
Well, that's kind of the thing. I mean, it'll be really weird if they do all the live action Disney stuff. I don't want that. Like, live action Will Smith slapping everyone.
Sorry, Emma Watson.
Aladdin.
Character.
But what if you got the, you know, older animated versions interacting with the new quote-unquote live-action version? I mean, I know they're both different versions of CGI and animation stuff, but maybe that's the crossover we need.
Will
in
Smith
this
just
multiversal.
Just decks Robin Williams.
maybe.
Gets on with his life. I think, Kingdom Hearts 4, the thing that I think they're going to do is the Star Wars stuff, and that's interesting mentioning Final Fantasy, because a lot of people have always wanted more Final Fantasy crossover stuff, so I guess we'll see. But Kingdom Hearts 4 is the latest game on the initial leak from last September. The got some people talking. So let's just dive into the rest of this stuff. Heading it up with Fightful Middle-Earth, assumedly the next Middle-Earth game after Shadow of Mordor, Shadow of War, and then this one, maybe it's just a codename or something, is listed as Fightful Middle-Earth. Now, Monolith are doing the Wonder Woman game. So if there is another Middle-Earth in the works, which would make sense, there's a lot of loads of tech that was made for the Middle-Earth games. The Nemesis system was brilliant, and it's only really been used in two things. And I'm pretty sure they patented it as well. So general thoughts on the Middle-Earth stuff coming back. Does Lord of the Rings matter in 2022? Chaps?
It's going to matter.
Not
more than ever, but once that Amazon series drops, my friend, I imagine we're going to see a big push.
A lot of raised eyebrows.
Better or worse for Lord of the Rings, you know. We might be having our eyebrows raised, but maybe it resonates. I don't know. I'm optimistic, cautiously optimistic for that. It's not, like, I mean, we're just talking about like the live action stuff now, but the trailer for that show didn't appeal to me.
No.
But it's like one of the most expensive shows, if not the expensive show ever made. So I imagine we'll see something of a Lord of the Rings push around that time. I want to say on the record, right now, that Fight for Middle Earth is a bad title. I hope it gets changed. That reminds me of like 2005 era shovelware, you know, fight for whatever.
Oh, so the thing is, like, it's weird because I, like, they almost struggled to kind of franchise the name in the first place. Like, it was like Shadow of Mordor, and then it was like, well, Shadow of War, I guess, but it's kind of Middle Earth with a colon, and then it's not in some places. So yeah, I don't know. I think if they fleshed everything out, like, considering how elongated the end game of Shadow of War could be, you could make that into a whole other game, but like, that game was so stodgy after a while. It was microtransactions, it was the orc loot boxes, it was stuff that made people wretch back in 2017.
I think stodgy is a great, great word for it, not only in terms of its practices at the time, like you mentioned there, but in just in terms of its structuring,
game scaffy.
Design. I remember...
Scuddy.
I don't know what that is, but it's a good word, that.
But you can feel it.
I can feel it. It's a very visceral word. Yeah. But like, even doing the missions in that game, you know, you had to, like, the way the missions were integrated within like the open world and stuff always, to me, felt a little bit awkward. You know, I loved the first game, and I was excited for the sequel, even in spite of all of its, you know, publicized business issues, but I remember playing it and just thinking, this is bloated, this is stodgy, it's scuddy, and I didn't click with it at all. I didn't even finish it, in fact.
Oh, really? Okay, so I finished, I mean, I was reviewing it, so I sort of, like, lived through it, and, like, I loved all the systems that were in there. It's just that it didn't, like, yeah, it was too much. I'm not going to quote that blooming quote from Lord of the Rings every time about, like, not enough butter spread over too much bread, and yet I will, because that's exactly what it was. But I feel like there's always been, the Nemesis system always felt like it should be something that would define the previous generation. Like, it should have been fleshed out so much more. And, like, you got little bits of it in Mafia 3. Like, some devs have done their spin on it, but nothing properly.
I'll tell you this, though. The Nemesis system, for as good as it was, when it came to that second game, maybe because, you know, the scale of the game got so big, when my nemeses were, like, returning, I always just kind of thought, who's this bloke again?
Yeah, yeah.
Who's this guy? Yeah. It didn't, you know, create those narratives in the same way that the first game did. And I don't know if that's a me problem or if it was a game
problem. No, that exactly. Exact same thing happened to me, especially because they make a big deal of going, like, I'm the one you couldn't kill. And I'm like, are you? Because, like, I think I've done this to 20 of you at this point. But yeah, either way, the idea of, you know, beating any random NPC in a game and then they come back hours later with, like, you know, parts of their face have been rebuilt, or they've got a new arm or a limb, and they have a go at you for beating them in a way that you did. That was always a really cool mechanic that, like, hardly anything else did much with. But... yeah.
That was good feeling, you know. What would you prefer them to be prioritizing, Wonder Woman or this potential Lord of the Rings
game? Here's why I've sat back and not said anything for the past 5 minutes. I've never seen Lord of the Rings, never played any of the games.
What?
And I'm going to quickly ask you to carry on.
Wait a minute. You've never seen Lord of the Rings?
No.
You've
never played Lord of the Rings, The Two Towers on PS2?
Oh, I did. Of the King.
And I know that Gollum's coming out because you keep talking about it. So, yeah.
Yes, it is.
So I can't believe you would memorize the Kingdom Hearts lore, but Lord of the Rings,
Game of Thrones, you know, that was enough for me.
Game of Thrones. It's that's a hell of a revelation to sort of just roll with, but I'm going to throw Lord of the Rings at you when we get out this room. But overall, it feels like the Lord of the Rings IP, like, had obviously a massive run post the original trilogy. The Hobbit stuff kind of killed it, and I guess we'll see what happens with the Amazon stuff, whether or not this comes to fruition. I assume Wonder Woman will be first, because the DC bubble is still kind of there, popping in slow motion, but, like, we'll see. The next thing down, though, is Tekken 8, which obviously Tekken 7, they had a massive time off in between Tekken 6 and 7. Katsuhiro Harada said that they never expected Tekken 7 to take off again so much, which is why they did so much season pass stuff. And even, you know, we mentioned Final Fantasy before, but Tekken 7's DLC even had Noctis from Final Fantasy 15. It had Negan from The Walking Dead. Like, that thing became, like, the Tekken platform that they tried a couple times before. But, like, where are you guys on Tekken? Where did you grow up with it? What are your thoughts on the old Tekken 8?
I massively grew up on it, and I loved them. And then it just... disappeared in the series. And then I played 7. Great game. I really liked it, but...
I feel like 7 like was that net to sort of cast over all the old school fans and bring you back in.
Yeah, it was good. Yeah. Am I excited for 8, though? Are you?
Well, I'm in a very similar boat to you, James Dowse. You know, we're going to be rowing and watching Lord of the Rings together soon. I was the same. You know, I grew up on Tekken, you know, absolutely adored the earlier games, Tekken 2, Tekken 3, even Tekken 4, I absolutely loved. And then
Tekken 4 is like the Dark Souls 2 of Tekken. It's the one where they went like, what if we don't do grapples? Every grapple just switches you with someone, so it was all about placement.
Patent that right now. That's going in every list.
I get a little shirt that
Tekken
says that.
Tekken 4 is the Dark Souls 2 of
Tekken. Also Tekken 4, the unsung hero. I don't even like Tekken 4 that much, but Tekken 4's Jin Kazama is the Jin Kazama.
I agree.
When he's all on the, he leaves the Mishima Zabatsu and he gets his hood on and he learns that new style of, I love
honestly,
it.
Man, being younger and just seeing hoodies in a game. I thought,
prototype.
You know, in my childhood brain, I didn't understand what Tekken needed until I saw hoodies in it and I thought, that's what I want.
I'm going to chart an exact course of hoodies. It was very cool when Jin Kazama wore a hoodie. It died when Master Chief put a hoodie on in the Halo 5 reveal. He's got a helmet on.
Don't get me started on that.
Why has he got a hood on?
Sometimes I try to put a hoodie on my giant earphones and I look a little bit like Master Chief trying to do that.
You do a little bit. It still would look better than the Halo 5 reveal. Yeah. Where I was just like,
that was
what are you
to
doing
build there? Hype for no reason.
Just an unveiling.
Yeah, just a waste of time.
Tekken 8, though, itself, I would look forward to it. Tekken 7, I think I got too late, and I was too spoiled by next-gen fighters. You know, I was spoiled by the likes of Mortal Kombat 11, for instance. And I remember being on the Mortal Kombat hype and thinking, I love Tekken. Tekken 7's on sale. It's got all the DLC. Like you said, you know, I want to play as Negan from The Walking Dead, sure. And then I bought it, but then I thought, this feels a little old, feels a little more dated than what I wanted. So hopefully Tekken 8 can cast that wide net again, be the platform, and then be the one that gets me in on it.
The thing, 7 is like, because 3 is my absolute favorite, and then like 7, I thought they changed up the formula in a really cool way. Like they brought in the Street Fighter style special moves. They had Akuma in there. They were writing him into the story, and it was like all this really cool crossover stuff. Because we never got the Tekken cross Street Fighter game.
No.
We got Street Fighter cross Tekken. Mm-hmm. Then the other one never came true. And again, Katsuhiro Harada, like Tekken's creator, whatever, he's always said he would love to put that out. And there's a version of the game that's like nigh on finished, but they couldn't, Namco and Capcom couldn't work their marketing budgets together to get that to work again. But that feels like the thing to do.
Yeah.
Like Tekken 7's still flying high. Go do the crossover thing and then bring that story stuff back into Tekken 8. Like, let me bash Ryu playing as Jin. Let me just do that.
Do you think that Smash Brothers has completely spoiled us? Like, we're so used to these crossovers now that if a game doesn't have them, you're like,
well, I mean, like,
Sora?
It depends what they do with it, I guess, because like Smash Brothers stuff I really like, but I don't like how Smash Brothers plays for the most part. It always like puts me off, whereas like I'll take an actual dedicated fighting game. So like I would, and the way that Akuma played in Tekken 7 was like Street Fighter. Like he had all of his regular button moves and stuff, and his animations were like Street Fighter. So for me, I like the idea of like you take a Tekken animation and put it up against a Street Fighter animation or put it up against a Guilty Gear animation. Like I would take that stuff where it's like, it feels like two literal IPs fighting each other. Like that would be kind of cool. But yeah, Tekken feels like a thing, but it could still be a thing again, even though Tekken 7 is doing very well.
There's something interesting in potentially Tekken 8 going up against Street Fighter 6, you know, because that was just announced, wasn't it? That's interesting that, you've got these two legacy fighting franchises, both potentially returning at around a similar time.
I'm going to do a dad joke, but can you believe it's only the 6th Street Fighter?
That is.
Can you believe that?
I can't believe it.
The joke is, there's been about 40 of them.
Only 6. No.
Well, it's just
only
6 main ones. And the 6th one's got a really original logo. Yeah. Dad jokes.
No more than 6. No more re-releases. No. Just the 6.
That's all you need.
Is it right that Street Fighter 3D was the best one?
No, it's not, James Dowse.
Because yes, it is.
Are you playing that when you were not watching Lord of the Rings? Just everything in 3D. Next one down is Gears 6, which I keep forgetting Gears of War's a thing, to be honest. I remember the originals, but where are you guys at on the old
I'm
Gears?
I'm very excited for that, because Coalition, yes.
The Coalition, yeah.
They're amazing developers. Like, visually, they create art every single time. And I can only assume they're using Unreal Engine 5.
Ooh.
It'll be a beautiful game.
We'd hope so.
And it will make Halo Infinite look silly with the amount of like, oh, I don't know, man. That's just an argument for another day, but the beauty that Coalition put into their games, is just unparalleled. So I am very excited for that.
I remember people really loving like the visual punch of Gears 5. Like it's a very like, look what my Series X or look what my console can do kind of game. JB, you're a bigger modern Gears fan.
Yeah, totally. I think, you know, Gears at this point makes Halo look like a silly bollocks. You know what I mean? I just feel like where Gears
Hey, which of them's got a TV show, right? Just, which one of them's flying high?
How is that TV show?
There's a cuckoo, mate.
How is that doing?
It's not actually that bad, to be honest, if you want to talk about
have
it.
Have you seen Bum Cheeks yet?
That's in the third episode. I'm not there yet. I've heard about the Bum Cheeks, but I'm not there yet.
Well,
but,
I mean yeah. Now. With Gears, I do think it's sort of flying high in a way that it was for me in the original trilogy. Like
right.
Gears 4, I thought was pretty good. But Gears 5, man, I still think that might be the best like big first party exclusive on the last Xbox consoles, like better than Forza for me, better than Halo like Gears 5 for me is the one. It's the thing that made me excited to have an Xbox 4, and I've always wanted to go back because I played it on the original one, and I want to play it on like the X, you know, like the updated version. But yeah, like the idea of them taking what they learned from Gears 5, which I thought was a huge improvement on Gears 4, and hopefully improving it again in the same way with Unreal Engine 5, like a proper next-gen version. To me, that just sounds... That's music to my ear holes.
Yeah. If they double down on... Because the thing is, like, in Gears 5, I liked how things felt a bit faster. I like that you can go in and out of cover a lot faster. You can, like, grab dudes on the other side of cover. You can do more melee attacks and stuff. I want those things to be fleshed out. Like, I want to go cover to cover and do more dynamic movement stuff. Like, yeah. Gears pioneered cover-based shooting. Like, I know it was in stuff beforehand, like Killswitch, but, like, it feels like they should do that again. Like, it's like either... Because cover shooting's barely in anything. Like... You know, as a base mechanic, like sometimes it turns up and stuff, but in terms of an actual cover shooter where you have mechanics built around it, I feel like they're really rare these days. And I feel like Gears like should be the name in cover shooting and you should be doing cool identifiable mechanics that are like, you know, you can only do that in Gears of War or someone else should take influence from it or whatever. I think they've always kind of struggled a bit. For me, like modern Gears is just fine. Like I said, I like the gameplay stuff, but nothing really got me going the same way as the original trilogy. Like it's just that original squad and all the Dom stuff in Gears 3 and whatever.
I wonder whether it was just kind of like low expectations because, like I said, you know, Gears 4 for me was just the fine one. So when I remember going, I went into Gears 5 on a nice little Friday. I got a bottle of wine in. For whatever reason, that one memory of that one night from years ago is like I think about it so fondly.
That's really
I just think, like, remember that time I was surprised by Gears again?
I'll tell you what, though.
Like, some wine, it was great.
I think everyone's got their own Gears, like, story. Because I got Gears 3 when I was a student and I was off and I played the whole thing in one sitting. And I was just like, I've made a life memory here. This is absolutely brilliant. Yeah. So it's like, I think that franchise, obviously, having grown up with it. Mr. James Dowse, did you grow up with the old Gears?
Yes, I did. Gears 2 was my first one, which was a fantastic game. Arguably the best one in the series, I would personally say. 2 or 3 are very much
up there. I might back 2.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I just loved it. I fell in love with it. But at the time, Halo 3 or / Reach was just coming out. Mm-hmm. So I was very much playing those instead. Mm-hmm. But Gears was like a guilty pleasure to go to in the background. But now it's somewhat overtaken Halo gameplay-wise and interesting-wise.
We're in interesting fields with Halo and Gears because I feel like Gears is barely anything at the minute. I feel like it's just not on... If there's a dinner plate, it's barely on the plate. Whereas I feel like Halo is a nice meal right now.
Yes.
And you can eat as much, and it keeps respawning. It's the same stuff over and over again, but at least it's there to be eaten. Mm. And I feel like, obviously, Halo Infinite's about to get its second season. Like I said, they're making that really wide media push, which makes me think of what Sega's doing with Sonic, where like you have the Halo TV show, you have the cookbook, you have all these wider things. I'm not seeing anything with Gears. I saw a guy on some reaction video had a Gears of War tattoo on his wrist, and I don't even think that guy knew that it was a Gears of War tattoo. I think he just thought it was a cool skull. So I don't know. I don't know.
Hey, it's a cool thing to come on this podcast and talk about it because to me, like, Gears is the meal, and Halo is the can of beans that has been in my cupboard, and I'm like, I'll eat it one day. It's on Game Pass. I'll eat it one day.
But Halo Infinite is active right now. Gears hasn't done anything for years.
It's always going to be there for us. You know, it's always going to be on the shelf. Like Gears, I mean, like Halo Infinite is always going to be on Game Pass. You know, waiting for me to potentially play the campaign one day.
They just added the Flood to the Master Chief Collection.
That's a different game.
I know, but Halo is active though.
Yeah, Master Chief Collection is.
Oh yeah, you're not wrong. The thing from 2014 that they finally fixed. And we should pass it over to the audience. Come find us on social media and berate us as to whether Gears or Halo is the more active IP. Next thing down is Titanfall 3. Now I feel like with every year past, Titanfall 2's majesty fades because nowhere near enough people appreciate it at the time. Morons like me are always out there like avoiding everything else and only talking about Titanfall 2 because I think it's the best shooter of the last 10 years.
Fantastic, yeah.
It's absolutely perfect. And so it makes sense to do a Titanfall 3. Obviously, Respawn have talked about the idea of it a few times, but they have been taken away by Apex Legends and Star Wars Jedi and whatever. Yeah, where are you guys at on whether Titanfall 3 ever really happens, considering how much of a mess Titanfall 2 was?
Can you remember when Apex launched and it just came out of nowhere and then took the world by storm? And, and I was kind of be like, oh, where's Titanfall 3?
Yeah.
I hope it does happen, but I'm quite happy with Apex as is, being that Titanfall 3 replacement currently, but I would love to carry on the campaign because that was a great campaign, Titanfall 2.
That whole thing, I love the way that they were just like, they literally said on the making of thing that they just thought of whatever, they thought of as many cool set pieces as they could, and then they wrote a story around it to stitch it all together, and I was like, just everyone should do that. Like, just stitch this, that's the best way to possibly do it. That machine pistol stuff and the final sequence and everything was awesome. Miss JP, big thoughts.
Huge fan of Titanfall, but when it comes to like a proper sequel, I'm not holding my breath just because I'm sure it's in some kind of form of production, probably pre-production. I'm sure they're kicking around the idea for the next Titanfall over and over again. Mm-hmm. But you look at what Respawn currently has on their plate, and I just think they have too much. You know, like they've got Apex Legends. Mm-hmm. That's still, you know, really successful. New content's coming out for that. They've got the sequel to Jedi Fallen Order. That's presumably coming out this year or next. And they've also got a bunch of other Star Wars stuff that they've just announced as well, like the first-person shooter. And I think they have a smaller strategy game as well. So like,
yes,
look
do.
At just how many projects they currently have in development. And I don't see where Titanfall fits in that anytime soon, which is such a shame because it's like, if EA can let them do all these projects, why not just slip in a Titanfall 3 for the boys?
Know.
You know what I mean? Come on.
Like just do a moderately priced single-player campaign, and I guess maybe they're going to wait and just release Titanfall as like a platform, and it just becomes the PvP version of Apex.
Would you take Titanfall 3 if it was free-to-play in the form of Apex Legends but retained the same Titanfall mode?
If it was like Halo Infinite,
yes.
Hell yes.
Exactly that, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Right. I mean, they'd have to have more content than... That's the problem with Halo Infinite.
That's what puts me off, yeah. If it is free to play, I'm scared of the Halo Infinite model of no content.
I think that, I mean, the thing is that Respawn are an unbelievable developer, especially under the wing of EA. It seems like they've been able to almost single-handedly sort of go, no, we're doing our own thing, and they somehow are able to do that without being having too much publisher interference. But yeah, I think that they'd have to nail the content side of it. But the Halo side of it, I feel like it's because it's 343 and because that development was so messy, that feels more unique, whereas Respawn feel more dependable or reliable. But yeah, my gut says that actually the Titanfall IP is dead, but I hope not.
I hope not.
Because it was just stellar. But yeah, go play Titanfall 2. Go spike those numbers all over again.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds. And they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Before we go any further, I want to talk to you about today's sponsor, Masterclass. With the amount of time we spend discussing and analyzing video games on this channel, it's always good to understand exactly how these experiences are put together. And fortunately for me, I can do just that with Masterclass. With Masterclass's streaming service, you can learn from the best to become your best, studying and growing with over 200 plus of the world's leading instructors. For me, I've been having a blast using a class on video game design by The Sims creator Will Wright to find out exactly how game mechanics are designed around player psychology, as well as learning how important playtesting is to shipping the titles that you and I both love. But it hasn't stopped there, as I've also been brushing up on my practical filmmaking skills directly from my favourite movie director, Martin Scorsese, as well as trying to get back in the cooking game with Roy Choi's amazing course on intuitive cooking. Seriously, my kitchen is a mess, but my belly has never been more grateful. For just $10 a month, an annual membership with Masterclass gets you unlimited access to courses on your phone, computer, smart TV, or even via audio-only modes. Even better, every new membership comes with a 30-day money-back guarantee, and 88% of members feel that the service has made a positive impact on their lives. And to put the cherry on top of that cake, right now, What Culture Gaming listeners get an additional 15% off any annual membership at masterclass.com/gaming. That's 15% off at masterclass.com/gaming. What's that? You want it one more time? Well, that's the URL, masterclass.com/gaming. Right, now I'm going to watch Tony Hawk try to teach me how to ollie properly. I'll see you all soon.
Next game down is Injustice 3, Gods Will Fall, which is a great name.
It certainly
is. If you can do more Injustice. And Ed Boon is tweeting about, well, he's tweeting about all sorts of things because he keeps tweeting about Mortal Kombat Shaolin Monks and then people like me cry because that was a great game. And he keeps going, oh, we're going to bring it back. No, I'm not going to. But like, he tweets about Injustice quite a lot too. Knows his audience. Man knows what people are waiting for. Injustice 3 obviously was part of this leak last September. Where are you guys at on the Injustice?
I feel like every time Injustice 3 is tweeted about or rumored, Ewan Paterson senses a disturbance in the force. And I feel bad for him because I'm like, that game should be out by now. Yes. I thought we would have already known that Injustice 3 was a thing.
You half
know,
just, a decade ago for Injustice 3. Yeah, 2017.
Like, just going off their previous cycle of doing Injustice, then doing Mortal Kombat, then doing Injustice, I figured, you know, with Mortal Kombat 11 being a few years old now, we would have had an announcement. But the other rumors seem to suggest that it's actually Mortal Kombat 12 that might be in production.
It's
as
worth
well.
Throwing that in here, yeah, because they mentioned, well, it mentions Mortal Kombat Next Gen, which there already are upgrades from Mortal Kombat 11 on next gen. But yeah, Mortal Kombat 12 is listed here as well. And there is that whole thing where Mortal Kombat 11 has ceased to receive updates or something. There was an official thing put out that they were done with DLC and stuff because they did do story expansions and everything. So maybe they're going to try and do both. I don't know.
I mean, I guess they're like a big enough company to do both. I would love to see another Injustice with, you know, the improvements that was made to Mortal Kombat 11 for next gen systems. I think that would be really awesome because I've never clicked with Injustice as much as I did Mortal Kombat, even though I really wanted to. Like, I played the first game to death. I thought it was all right. I kind of dropped off the second game. So I want this to be...
Oh, I loved
you. Really?
Two, I thought was stellar, man. Two, I thought was NetherRealm's best thing they've made until MK11. Like, yeah, by far.
Maybe I was spoiled by, again, it's a kind of a Tekken 7 thing where I played Mortal Kombat 11 first, then went back to
Injustice 2.
No, so that was kind of like, I was just like, why doesn't this player like Mortal Kombat 11?
Yeah.
But yeah, I would still love them to do it. I think it would be a shame if they skipped it and went straight to MK12.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, same. Superheroes, James Styles?
Yeah.
Yeah, go on. Also, yeah, Mortal Kombat. I always think it's interesting with Mortal Kombat how it's up against the fact that the better rendering tech gets, the more likely, like, the more it freaks. Like, there was all those reports about MK11 or on the various staff being like, I'm just exposed to gratuitous real-world violence to research the fictional violence. And the more realistic those depictions of gore become, the more weird it gets that we're actually just watching a fully rendered body get snapped in half and pulled apart in entrails, whatever. That's not to say that I don't giddily absolutely love that stuff in a digital context, but at the same time, that's always a weird thing where I'm just like, how realistic are graphics going to get before Mortal Kombat can't be in that space? Like, I just think that it's just a weird like glass ceiling thing that I feel like is always encroaching them, and MK11 was talked about in that regard too. Something else on this leak is the Batman Arkham Knight ray tracing upgrade, which I'm going to just sort of take as a general conversation around the state of Batman Arkham Knight, because why is that game not got an update?
What's going on? I hear this from Scott Dillman on the daily of why don't the Arkham games and Knight.
I'm messaging your partner, hey, can you just tell him that I'm still thinking about it? Just, why is it not there?
You're messaging up the person on the reception in my building, just saying, please put me through.
Buzz him.
He's taking his phone out the hook.
Yeah.
But yeah, I fully agree. I mean, I was talking to your friend of mine, Adam Nicholas, the other day, he was going through them for the first time, and I just kind of felt like, you're playing them on PlayStation 5. Why aren't there the definitive versions of these games available? I know there were the remasters for 1 and 2, but even they weren't the definitive versions, in my opinion. You know, some of the changes that they made to the aesthetic, for instance, that may have been technical limitations at the time, but improved the atmosphere, were kind of taken away here. The color palette was kind of different. There aren't definitive versions of those games, and I want them to exist. High frame rate, high resolution, RTX.
No, literally, like, I mean, obviously after watching The Batman, I was amazed they didn't have the Batman skin in Arkham Knight. Why was the Batman skin not in there? Like, that was dumb.
100%.
When did that game come out?
Which one? Arkham Knight? 2015.
Yeah. Well, okay.
So it's been a long time.
Very much in, you know, it's going to happen, isn't it?
Well, you think so, but yeah. I mean, it's really, the thing is, it's really dumb because I looked into all this stuff, again, on the daily, and like, and they don't, there's a stupid thing with Arkham City where if you'd never patched that game and you have a physical disc, you can play it in 60 frames a second, but they patched out the 60 FPS. Okay. I don't know why. Right. And so like, but yeah, all three Arkham games, even in the definitive re-release that they did, are like 1080, 30. And it just, I'm just like, are we, is it the Stone Age? What are we doing? Everything's meant to be 1080. I'm playing Mad Max in 120 frames a second, 4K.
That's why you play it on a PC, Scott.
What's that, mate? How are you spelling that, mate? I can't get one of them.
The thing is, though, with this RTX upgrade is I love the Hitman games.
Yes.
And they've announced that Hitman RTX is coming this year. Mm-hmm. And that's been like, whoa, I'm going to get myself back in that because I want to see those shiny surfaces. Do you know
His
what
head's
I mean?
Going to be shinier
exactly.
than ever.
Exactly. I want to see that barcode shine. And like, it is updating all of these old games. I know Hitman 2 came out, what, last year? Hitman 3, sorry. Was it last year?
Yeah, last year.
Yeah. It's just bringing me back. Just a cool little upgrade.
Yeah.
Why wouldn't you do it for Batman?
Why
wouldn't you? It's like one of the highest rated games ever.
Yeah, and it's like in Batman's state or whatever, it's like the easiest thing. New skin, it's a frame rate unlock. Like, how hard is that?
It's true. I mean, the new skin especially is nuts that there wasn't, you know, something for that. I remember when Batman vs. Superman came out, and I thought that was a bad movie, but I played Arkham Knight again in the Batfleck like costume because I was like, I want to be on the hype. Uh-huh. I wonder with this and Injustice and Mortal Kombat and the other WB games that we've talked about, you know, obviously they were recently merged with Discovery. It's like Warner Brothers Discovery. Mm. I was reading either a rumor or a report this morning about how, you know, some of the studios still don't know really what's going on, whether they're going to be, you know, kept with the merger, whether they're going to be sold off, trying to figure out whether or not they're going to be able to make an Injustice. Will those deals carry through? Is there any point them starting a game that requires the Warner Brothers characters when they could just focus on Mortal Kombat characters, which they presumably, you know, own and could take with them if they were sold off.
And also, like, in regards to Rocksteady, they've had one of the roughest times since Arkham Knight. I mean, all the amount of back and forth on the different games, different licenses. Like, I imagine they are completely head down on Suicide Squad, which in itself got delayed. So maybe they just can't free up the resources, the manager, the personnel, to be able to just make a little cheeky skin. So maybe it just is, maybe they are sort of, you know, flattened out that much. But yeah, I just make Arkham Knight run in 60 frames a second, to be honest. And I don't want to buy a rig to do it. I just want it to work on the PlayStation 5.
The thing is, Scott, RTX, that means a lot of shiny puddles, and that's all Gotham City is, puddles.
Well, the thing is, if
that's
they...
That's going to be taxing on the hardware.
If they, that's the thing. They'll do it, and it'll be like, well, you can do the shiny puddles, but you've got to play it in 30.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'll put it in 60, lose the ray tracing.
Lose the puddles.
Because I can't do both. It's one of the worst afflictions of the modern generation. The next thing down is the Final Fantasy IX remake, which is an interesting thing. I don't know where either of you guys are on Final Fantasy overall. I know Josh played Final Fantasy VII Remake.
Yes,
I've played VII Remake, yeah.
Okay. Would you be interested in a Final Fantasy IX remake at this stage? Or do you want more Final Fantasy VII Remake, considering they did start that 2 years ago?
My friend.
Go on.
I don't know what Final Fantasy IX is.
It's two after seven. It's two better. Two more. It's plus two.
No, well, for this, just purely selfishly, because I, you know, have no history with the Final Fantasy franchise, I would take Final Fantasy VII Part 2 over it, but because people do apparently say that 9 is also good.
Nine,
as well. Please tell me more.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. As someone who lives and dies by this S, Final Fantasy IX is arguably the best one. Right. 7 has the most nostalgia because it was the first one in the West. It was the first 3D one. 9 is a way better rendered game with a way tighter story that it was actually translated properly and not just given to one person in an afternoon like 7 was. Everyone overlooks 8 because Square Enix themselves lost the master code for that game for like 2 decades and then eventually managed to put it back together. That's why we only got remasters a few years ago. But Final Fantasy IX, excuse me, was my first favorite one. And the ending is absolutely gorgeous. Very fairy tale story overall. Less about like the eco-terrorist stuff of Final Fantasy VII. Like obviously they're completely different stories. I don't know if the average person knows that these days. That was always common knowledge when I grew up, that each Final Fantasy is a completely separate thing. But I don't know how often, if everyone knows that these days.
I don't know. It's obvious to me.
Because people go, I need to play all 13 of them to play 14. Like, no.
Right.
They're all separate.
Because I played Kingdom Hearts first, I thought Cloud was a Kingdom Hearts character.
First Lord of the Rings and now this. It's just.
But then I played Final Fantasy and I was like, oh, there you are.
There he is.
There's just the Cloud.
There he is. Where's his bandages? All the bandages on the sword that aren't
big
in there.
Big sword, yeah.
But yeah, I think it's interesting in terms of even just writing down the idea of Final Fantasy IX Remake, because is everything going to get the 7 Remake treatment? I don't think so, because 7 was like a cultural, or is a cultural behemoth, whereas 9 is just another Final Fantasy installment that people love. But yeah, I think that they would assumedly just do like a visual overlook, pass kind of thing. Because, yeah, Chrono Cross was also on this leak, which is another, like, beloved RPG that's now been re-released. But apparently runs like S, so I guess we'll see. But, yeah, in terms of Final Fantasy stuff, 9 would be the next go-to if you're after 7. But, like, I don't know what to take the 7 remakes
in. Have they not
in.
Just done 1 through 5 in HD 2D?
Only on Steam and iOS. And I think 6 is in there too, but it was, they're the Pixel HD remasters, but they're only on phones because we're Square Enix.
If we're going through that, so 1 through 7 has been remade somewhat.
In the broadest possible strokes, yes.
We're skipping 8 and going straight to 9.
Apparently.
Okay.
Yeah. But it's the thing, 8, it had like a bit of a love in a couple of years ago when Square Enix found the code in the cupboard and went, oh, here it is. And they put it back out again. And everyone went, yeah, 8's brilliant. And it is brilliant. But like, it just always gets overlooked because they themselves have always had to overlook it because they never had access to the master files.
Why do they always lose codes? Because the Lost Kingdom Hearts is source code as well.
Right. Just some blokes, the postman. Why? I don't know. Just why Square Enix, full stop, to be honest. Like, every single decision, left, right, and center. Speaking of various remakes and remasters, though, Half-Life 2 remastered is down here, which does Half-Life... I mean, okay, I feel like I say this with a few different ones of these, but Half-Life feels like such a specific old-school IP. Like, I feel like, obviously, Half-Life Alyx was a bit of a spike in regards to popularity and stuff, and that game's very, very impressive, but maybe, do we think that we need Half-Life Alyx for PSVR 2, something like that, before you then do the remasters? Or is this the thing that reminds the console player of Half-Life, and then you do the Alyx stuff?
Well, this is a moment where I feel like your friend of mine, Rich Hudson, would want to chime in, and I want to channel him right now, Scott, because I know you're not a huge fan of Half-Life 2. Is that fair to
say?
Well,
the thing is, I'm absolute sacrilege, because I played Half-Life 2 for the first time on PlayStation 2, which was the worst way to play that game. So I really didn't like it, but it also ran like hell, and I hated the way that it felt. I came off Halo, and then went to Half-Life, and so I had the worst possible experience with it. So I've gone back and played it on Series X, funnily enough, because it is in the orange box, and it's better. I still don't think it's that much better. It feels like a big tech demo, but you can hit those barrels and roll those barrels down the hill.
Well, that's a good point, though, because, you know, I really like Half-Life 2. I don't love it, but I like it. I also got into it a little bit late, so a lot of its innovations were already cribbed by other games that I experienced and loved more. Mm-hmm. But when it comes
better.
To...
Better is the word there.
I don't want to be sacrilegious in this podcast. You know what I mean? I've already invoked Rich Hudson. I can't say that it's actually bad. He might track
He tunes
down
in. Oh, they've been talking about you, and he just gets finished off.
What was I talking about?
Half-Life 2. Could run.
That's it, yes. It certainly did. And I don't know how you would remaster Half-Life 2 in a way, because do you give it like the proper ground-up remake treatment, or do you just polish it and then just say, look, this is how it was back then, this is an icon of the genre, experience it first, or are you trying to get new players in with a Resi 2 style gimmick?
Well, I also wonder as well, because if they remaster Half-Life 2 and it's the other two episodes, then you once again have the cliffhanger, which I know comes back around in Alyx, but it's like, that could be like a nice little poetic thing if you tie it together better. But obviously in Alyx, because you are revisiting some scenes from Half-Life 2, you kind of do have those environments rendered again, so maybe that's how it would look or something. Either way, I feel like everyone knows what Half-Life is on the periphery, and then it's like different people have had different interactions with the franchise. But
here's where it is: a VR remake of Half-Life 2.
Ooh,
because they'll probably use the same assets as Half-Life Alyx.
That would make the most sense.
I would love that so much.
Then you've got that.
But then you can pull the car door off.
Yeah,
and hold it up.
You could do that. But then Half-Life 1 is on a PC, then all the rest on VR, and then. That then reinvigorates the wanting the ending to be finished with Half-Life 3 again, and then they'll not do it, so they'll make everyone annoyed. And
That's actually a really good point. Like, if you give Half-Life 2, you know, the proper remaster, remake treatment, where you're like, you're spending years rebuilding assets, you know, redoing textures, all that stuff, do you just piss people off where they say, well, why are you spending all this time doing this when you literally have not given us episode 3 or Half-Life 3 for...
Well, that's the thing, because it was Mark Laidlaw who left Valve, but did put that the ending out, but it was all rephrased. But it was like, you just swapped the words out, basically. But it was like, that was the initially planned ending. But then, like I said, Alyx goes back to that territory. So it's like, maybe all of this is eventually gearing back to a proper Half-Life 3. But whether it's all in VR instead is like, that's really interesting, because that would make more sense.
But at this point, it's like George R.R. Martin's next book. Like, he's never going to do it, because there's so much pressure on Half-Life 3. If it's not a 20 out of 10, it's not good.
Yeah. I feel like Alyx was a bit of a balm to that. Like, okay. I feel like people... I haven't played Alyx, but I feel like the general reception was like, oh my God, they still have it. Like, it's still that good. It still can wow you, and it's still like, that world is still great to be in. So, like, I wonder if that's a tide over. But it's weird. I always feel like impacts of games are muted if they're not on console. Like, I feel like the general general gaming populace doesn't freak out when something's only on PC, even though obviously Alex was incredibly impressive. We should end on Call of Duty Modern Warfare 3's remaster, which I feel like the remasters of Call of Duty, like for as massive as those games were, they're just kind of there. Because like the main Modern Warfare is still continuing, like the actual new Modern Warfare kind of eclipses the remasters.
Well, they have so many Call of Duty games right now, like you say, you know, that are literally living alongside each other. You got Warzone, you got Call of Duty Black Ops, you got Modern Warfare, you got Vanguard, you got all of these titles. And then on top of this, Activision is also like, well, we can remaster the old ones and put them out. And if rumors are to be believed, and the reports that have come out from Activision over the past few years, they're apparently literally just sitting on the remaster of Modern Warfare. Or they were sitting on the remaster of Modern Warfare 2. Right. They eventually released the campaign mode, but apparently they did the multiplayer as well, and then thought, actually, we don't want to cannibalize our sales again, because they released the multiplayer suite for the first Modern Warfare thingy. For me, Modern Warfare 3 is the worst one in that franchise.
That's the only one I've not played.
Really?
Yeah.
I see, the story itself is quite good, IMO, but it's just, it was the one, because it was after Infinity Ward, you know, like lost Vince Zampella and, you know, a lot Jason of the West. Employees, Jason West, sorry, yeah, as well. And it was kind of the one after that, so they had support from like a bunch of different studios, and it just feels like the most corporate one, which I know is kind of weird to say about Call of Duty, but it's the one where you can tell they were just pumping out a Modern Warfare rather than having some kind of, you know, clear-cut vision of we want this to revolutionize games in the same way that the first two did. It's still all right, but if it came out, I wouldn't play it, and I'm a massive Call of Duty fan.
That's the thing. There's always that feeling with Call of Duty, especially when they started settling into the annual model. Like Modern Warfare 3 was the first time where me having gotten them every year, it felt like it's just another Call of Duty. Like 3 felt like one too many, and because it didn't have that trilogy feel, you weren't like, you know, dying for more after 2 in terms of a story pull, that it didn't like, yeah, it didn't really justify itself. So it's an interesting one to go back to,
plus,
I guess.
Plus, it was on the back of Black Ops 1.
Yes.
Which, in my opinion, was the best.
The best COD.
Fantastic COD.
Yeah. Would you pick up on Warfare 3?
So is this year Modern Warfare 2?
Yes.
And then
the new Modern Warfare 2.
Right, okay. And then when is Modern Warfare 3 Old coming out? how do they market that?
It's a great question. Like, do they do the same thing that they did with the first Modern Warfare and bundle it in with the new
game?
With a game
that nobody wanted.
Exactly. That was
Infinity War was incredible. Infinity War. Infinite
Snow
Warfare.
And somebody else
that game's great, man.
It's pretty good, actually.
It's really good. It's so overlooked.
I thought the multiplayer was bad.
Oh, the multiplayer sucks. Black Ops 3 and Infinite Warfare, multiplayer, not even a thing. Yeah. But the campaign's so good.
Okay. The question of where this would fall though in their release schedule, I think, is, you know, a big question mark, because we have Modern Warfare 2 coming out this year, and if they're going to continue what they did with the last game, where they, you know, used old levels from Modern Warfare 1 and then Modern Warfare 2 and just kind of plugged it in the multiplayer suite and were like, look, these are just remastered versions of the map. You don't need then a remastered full release of the game. So if it's going to be campaign only, I can see them just dropping it like they did Modern Warfare 2 and just being like, look, there it is if you want it. But
there's also the fact that they've been bought by Xbox, Microsoft. Yeah. Like, there was that whole thing where Phil Spencer said they would look into relaxing the annual model. So, like, maybe this is the last one, big release, and they take 2 years, 3 years off, and then it can just drop in the middle of there. Like,
that's a good point, yeah.
Like you said, they've got, like, 4 competing platforms, and it's kind of crazy. Like, it is kind of nuts, the amount of stuff they're trying, the amount of plates they're trying to balance. I've mentioned plates a lot. It's just lunchtime.
Yeah. I'm really hungry.
I want to eat.
I'm so hungry.
It's got to be done.
Do you not think that they should just have a Call of Duty platform where they put these, like, let's say they do Modern Warfare 3. Why don't they put those maps on one platform and then just add more and more maps on it, like the Halo Infinite model?
Yeah, I think it's just they love the unit sales. Yeah. Like, every year, true. It's like, oh, we can do premium
unit sales.
Do
Xbox now care?
Well, that's the thing, right? I mean, that's like, assumedly it'll be offset by Game Pass revenue, but that's the big experiment they'll assumedly be trying, because, like, yeah, they can potentially get away with not doing that stuff anymore. But yeah, the amount of different plates in motion, the amount of different wheels that are spinning with Call of Duty is kind of insane.
Yeah.
And you bring back all the legacy content as well alongside it. Like, that's a lot of Call of Duty.
It's a
even
lot.
If you play every day, like, they multiple game engines, like, for the same thing. There's a lot of stuff. But yeah, overall, this GeForce leak is incredibly tantalizing. And there's not that much, if anything, in here for first party stuff. But a lot of third party big surprises have been covered. So I guess we'll keep an eye on it. We'll see what happens with things like Summer Games Fest, because obviously E3 is not happening this year. And we'll see what else other studios might want to release across the summer, and we might talk about stuff for the rest of this year. For now, it's been the What Culture Gaming Podcast. I've been your host, Scott Taylor, joined by James Dowes.
Thank you both of you. And that was a lovely afternoon.
Josh Brown.
Thank you, James Dowes.
Stop it.
Thank everyone, and we'll catch you next time.
Bye.
Lord of the Rings.
Bye.
Watch Lord of the Rings, no. James Dowes.
Nope.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.